Welcome to Bar Fights with attorney and advocate Sarah Klein, taking on issues that matter and advocating for legal, cultural, and political change everywhere in order to protect children and vulnerable adults. Joining the conversation are survivors, advocates, lawyers, media personalities, athletes, celebrities, authors, wellness aficionados, and many more. Because bringing real justice takes a team of experts who care. Now, leading the fight is your host, Sarah Klein.
Hey, you guys, happy Monday. Welcome back to Bar Fights. I'm so happy you're here. Today's show is critical, and I feel like I say that every week, but thankfully, I have the most incredible guests of all time. And for you parents, especially for those of you who know a child, love a child, this one is a must listen. My guest today is named Chris McKenna, and he is the founder of Protect Young Eyes. We're going to dive into what that is and what they do today. Chris had U.S. Senate testimony in 2019 that catalyzed new online child protection laws and won an incredible award. And now Chris is an advisor to legislators, global tech companies on policies and improvements. And you guys, anyone who has a child is raising a child. I'm raising two of them. These conversations terrify me. And it's people like Chris who are going to teach us how to navigate it, what to do, what to look for, and how to best protect our kids. Chris McKenna, welcome to Bar Fights.
Thank you, Sarah. It's a pleasure to be here. I mean, I love the name, what it stands for, because we've got to get gritty with some of these topics. Big tech just isn't going to roll over easy. And, you know, I think we've got to speak hope into parents. But when it comes to making changes, yeah, it's a bit of a fight. So this is the right spot for it.
Oh my gosh, I'm so happy to have you here. And what we try to do on this show is take on issues that matter. Yeah. And that's exactly what you're doing with Protect Young Eyes. First, can you tell my audience what you do, what Protect Young Eyes is, and how you started this?
It is a happy accident. Isn't that fun sometimes, right?
I mean,
a CPA. I'm an accountant. I'm supposed to be a partner at Ernst & Young right now. At least that's what I thought. But at a point in my career back in 2009, the Lord called me into full-time ministry. So I went from corporate America into full-time middle school ministry because they're so much alike, right? Not at all. But I was in that from 2009 to 2016, which is the exact time when we put the internet in the pockets of children. And that terrified me. The internet that we could carry, right? Instant access to 100 million people in their pocket. I saw a tweet on X the other day that said, putting social media in the pockets of children is like carrying around somebody who's constantly picking a fight with you. And it's like, that's so true, because you are always wanting to measure and compare and belong during that. And then we put that in their pocket from 10,000 voices. I can't imagine. And I was an adult who struggled with pornography for years. And then I watched us put that in their pockets, right? So all of that became this desire in me to do research for the families at my church, started a small Facebook group that led to launching the website protectyoungeyes.com in 2015. And from there, we've grown to now a team of six individuals. They do presentations all over the country, some internationally, some weeks, 15, 20 presentations all over the country, and are trying to spread as much awareness as possible while also policy work. The team of presenters that I've trained up now are allowing me to focus more on some of the policy work, advising mostly at the state level. Our federal government is a mess. They can't get anything done. I hope they do eventually, but we're now in year 25 years, right, Sarah, since we've passed any significant child safety legislation at the federal level. So we're working more at the states, with the states where they're more nimble, we can get more done, and just state by state, passing as much as we can.
That's insane to me. 25 years ago, we didn't know the word Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, right? Like
We
in the
didn't know MySpace. Like
that's
we
it. Nothing. We had the encyclopedias in our house. That was about it. And so you're telling me the law has not caught up with the times that have changed, right?
No. We created protection for children in the age of Netscape, AOL, and chat rooms,
Wow.
and created guidelines based on the risks that existed at that time. Look at what we could have never conceived. Even in the last 6 months with generative AI and deepfake and nudifying technology, right? All of these things that are in our app stores. Like right now, you could go to the Apple App Store and find a whole list of deepfake apps that are rated 4+, 12+, that you could download and turn any photo of you or any photo of me into anything of anything, right? It's terrifying. So we need the rest of the world is way ahead of us. We'll get into that, I'm sure. But we really, as the supposed leader, right? The one that is the country where most of the largest companies, other than, the owner of TikTok over in China, everybody else, it's within our borders. We got to do more.
We got to do more. So many of my listeners are raising kids. I'm raising kids.
Sure.
Mine aren't at the age of having phones or computers or anything yet. But what do we as parents need to know? And that's probably like a 10-hour conversation.
No, it's good. I'm ready for it because for parents, I'm big on right tech at the right time. There's no such thing as giving your children technology too late. Every mom or dad, mostly I know moms listening to this, who have young children, there is no such thing as giving children technology too late. There's no such thing as a child who isn't going to get into college if they don't get an iPhone early. There's no such thing as a child who won't get a good job someday because they don't have access to social media at a certain age. They will all figure it out at the right time, appropriately. And that's not just some conservative religious point of view. I was just in Europe with a bunch of scientists and doctors. One, the science head of a large mental health organization, who told me point blank, and he let me publish it. He said, there is no evidence that supports that delaying technologies harms children in any way. And then he went on to say, the most well-adjusted children tend to be those well-adjusted emotionally, relationally, tend to be those who acquire it later in their development. So if that's the drum that I could just bang all day long, then that's the one I want to bang. It's one of our principles. We have five core values that we share with all families, that families who tend to have kids who use technology in good and positive ways. Core value number three is delay addictive technology. And families who do that tend to have kids who are better adjusted, are more relationally competent, have better emotional and social IQ, all of those things that we want. So that's what I would say to parents of younger kids. One of my more recent Instagram posts that I just want everybody to really believe is that we are responsible for our children's future wellness, not their current happiness.
Oh, standing ovation for that, Chris.
That in technology, through their brilliant billion-dollar marketing or whatever, million-dollar marketing campaigns, baits us into believing that happiness now is more important. And I know the evidence is already there. We are raising a generation of children who are not adjusted for a relational world with teams and difficulties and jobs and needing to get up in the morning and handle hardship because it's all been handed to them in a dopamine loop day after day when everything feels good and fine, and it's not reality.
And that's where we're seeing suicide rates in young people increase by exponential numbers, right? They're unable to, withstand any sort of adversity or hardship, much less communicate, have conversations, look people in the eyes, play, be creative, experience the outdoors. And experience, social connection and social interaction. Something you just said I think about the parents I'm around, and for the most part, they see eye to eye with me on this technology issue. But I see so many parents that, in theory, want their kid to be all the things we just listed, right? Engaged and healthy and, able to communicate and all these things. But parents are very good at making excuses for just this one time, just this one road trip. Why? Because A, it's easier sometimes for the parent to numb their kid out on a phone or on an iPad.
Sure.
Two, I think I've seen this thing where parents want not only to be cool themselves, but they want their kids to be quote unquote cool and not the weird kid and not the kid left out because they don't have social media or, Instagram or whatever. Do you agree with that? Do you see that too?
I see that. I also think it's complicated, and here's why. The 14-year-old version of me or the 14-year-old version of you, Sarah, would have felt the exact same way. Some of those kids do too. And I talk to enough teens to have empathy for that situation. That's a cohort issue. What I mean by that is author Jonathan Haidt talks about collective action. There's a collective action issue right now where the large majority of children all have something, even though it's not the best thing for them. The large majority of them have it. And the one or two that don't, even though in theory and even scientifically, we know that that should be better for them, they feel so left out that psychologically it's worse for them. So we have negatives on both sides of this because of what he calls a collective action issue. We need to switch the script on this to make the collective action not having it, that that's the cool group, that that's the tribe of parents, which is why we want packs that are made in kindergarten, first, second, and third grade with parents who all look at each other and decide we're not going to. Therefore, the collective action is for them and not against them. So that you aren't left with a child who does feel totally left out, who does feel left uninformed about things that are happening on group texts and in Snapchat because that's the only way their friends are communicating. That would have been like, when you think about it, imagine growing up in the 80s and not having a telephone attached to the wall, right? And that would have made you feel extremely isolated. If somebody would have had to have walked over to your house to tell you everything that was going on in the analog days. So that's where, yes, I think parents are, partially, and I don't say at fault, but are responsible, right, for some of this. But I also want us to have a lot of empathy for what it is to be that kid in that situation and really understand the way that they're feeling and engage them in conversations about this. And for parents who are struggling with not wanting their kid to be upset or be left out, always explaining the why, having hard conversations with parents of other kids that your kids are friend with to come up with other ways. I think we live in a time where we more often don't know the parents of the kids our kids are hanging out with. And I think we need to solve that. Because back when I was growing up, my mom knew every parent really well. And we're just not in that. We're a lot more independent these days. And so there's a lot of things, sort of, I think, working against our kiddos here that I just want us to be aware of.
I mean, your point is very well taken. I remember begging to have a landline telephone in my bedroom when I was,
Right.
in high school so I could call my friends. So I take that point. So what is the happy medium? What is the answer, Chris? What is that happy medium? How do
Well,
we do
there,
it? What do we do?
I
I'm
know.
freaking out.
No. I do think that we do have a responsibility to surround our children with friends and families who are aware of what your position is, a decent number of them who align with that position. And if they don't respect it, then hard decisions will need to be made. I don't want my kiddos constantly around friends who are constantly in digital spaces that I don't believe are healthy. All that creates is a secondhand smoke situation for my son, who is going to be exposed. And I wouldn't put them in that situation, right? And so those are hard conversations for us as parents, but I
Yeah.
think we need to have them. So if my son is going to be going, to someone's house, I think back to, and it's not perfectly apples to apples, but just, an example of this. When I was going over to a friend's house, my mom and dad wanted, or especially my mom, she wanted to know if they had Showtime, Cinemax, or HBO. Like, that was the worst that could happen to me. MTV got added to the list then, right after that. But she thought it was important to know what I could be exposed to. Now, I think we have the same right. I just think we're more afraid of having those kinds of conversations. Now, I know it's probably easier for me. Everybody in my community knows that if Chris McKenna's son is coming over to their house, they're going to get a talk from the internet safety dad. They just know that. But I think that if we approach it kindly and we just sort of even apologetically say, I know this isn't going to be easy. I'm kind of a nervous Nelly around some of the internet stuff because it's just one picture, one video, one thing. So I just ask everybody, it's not you, I'm not targeting you. I ask everybody the same sort of general questions around unprotected devices. How much control and monitoring do you have? I just want to make sure good, awesome kids don't stumble into a bad internet. And I think if we phrase things a certain way and prepare ourselves in a non-judgmental way to have that conversation, that most parents are willing to have it. Now, not all, and if you run into some who aren't, well, then I think that that's a situation that we have to avoid, or we have to give our sons or daughters a ridiculous number of tools of their own in that situation to know how to navigate it, what to do in certain situations, and to make sure relationally that you have such a connection with them that if anything went south in what happened to them at that house or whatever, that they would know beyond any doubt that they can land safely and softly with you because you are constantly peppering them during car time, meal time, and bedtime with curious, loving questions about what's going on, and just nothing would ever make you mad that they could bring to you, right? All of these things that we need to then offset if we can't have those. So to me, everything, Sarah, is a risk balance. I come from a risk background in my professional world. I was a risk manager at Ernst & Young. And so I still see the world that way. And I'm trying to mitigate risk both technically and relationally in the lives of my kiddos. So if I have apprehensions about the technical controls, like access or routers or other physical hardware, software things, then I got to offset that risk with relational controls around connection and conversation and curiosity and things to try to bring that risk into a spot where I'm comfortable. And if the combination of those two things still doesn't get me there, then that's not a spot where I want my child. So that's the way that I just tend to balance things out to see things. And every parent can ask their own questions in that way, in those kind of categories, look for that balance and do what's best for your kid.
So basically what you're saying is it's not easy. There's no magic pill
No.
or bright line rule or magic wand that we can wave to make sure that our kiddos stay safe online and with technology. I've heard of different like programs and safeguarding mechanisms that parents use online. Are there particular ones that are fabulous, or do those even work? What's the deal with all of that?
Yeah, so I'm a framework picture guy. It's that left brain sort of CPA side of me. So
Yeah.
we have a picture that we use in all of our presentations. Friends and followers, you could also find it on Instagram. It's our five layers of digital protection. So if you could visualize in your head for just a minute a pyramid, think of the pyramids over in Egypt or something. And the bottom, and imagine that there were five horizontal like sections to that pyramid, from the widest section at the bottom that gets sliced all the way up to the thinnest, smallest part at the top of the pyramid, right? The triangle there at the top. And we talk about five layers of protection, if you can imagine that pyramid. Now, for faith-based friends, we build that pyramid on the foundation of rock, right, of prayer. But for those who don't, that's fine. There's practical things that we can do. And the first layer is always relational, that connection, right? We do a whole lot in our talks with parents around pursuing connection with our kids, modeling behaviors. We do tech together, attitudes of curiosity and practice and co-play and all these things that build digital trust with our children so that we can then do other things, right? So that's the bottom layer. The tools that you're referring to, then the next layer is the Wi-Fi layer. And especially of mamas with younger kiddos, because a lot of our young kids, they don't have devices with data plans. They don't have a cell, right? They don't have a phone with a SIM card. It's a lot of Wi-Fi stuff like Chromebooks and Xboxes and PlayStations and Switches and Kindles and smart TVs. These are all Wi-Fi dependent and they depend on the router in our house. And so the McKenna house, we use the Griffin router and it's the only router that we recommend. We have a whole post that maybe you could include in your show notes called The Ultimate Guide to Understanding Routers because they're often really confusing to people. It's this technical thing that the internet guy probably set up at one point a couple of years ago, and it sits on a shelf or in a corner or behind a couch, and you haven't really thought about it since. But if you're a parent of a young child, it is the most important digital device in your home because it prevents early accidental exposures to things that good kids sometimes stumble into by doing innocent searches. No different than when I was flipping through books in the library, National Geographic or encyclopedias, and you find stuff and you're curious. Well, that's nothing compared to the curiosity that a child can be drugged down when it comes to the open internet. We don't ever want a young mind or young eyes to be exposed to unfiltered internet access. And your router is the best way to prevent that, where you can, like a good lock on a door, prevent the porn from ever being discoverable on those devices in the first place by blocking it. And the other thing to remember is anybody who comes over to your house, friends, family, caregivers, and others who maybe use your Wi-Fi, you are responsible for everything that happens on your home network. I know it's them, but your name is on the bill with all of the searches that happen at your internet service, right? It's your responsibility. So our routers can prevent all kinds of accidental harm, and they also are our responsibility to make sure that the internet in our homes, right? And that's just the second layer. You get then into devices where we only give kids Gab or Bark phones. We never give a child an iPhone as their first device. It was never made for kids. The parental controls on it are buggy. They don't work super well. I know it's what 86% of teens have, and it's not what 86% of teens should start with. It simply is not made for them. And then we get into other layers. But those are some of the practical things, right? There's software that we recommend, whether it's Bark software or Covenant Eye software that you put on devices that travel home to home, network to network, that aren't connected to, say, your Wi-Fi all of the time. And you just move up the ladder there. So it's relationships, Wi-Fi, devices are layer three, location is layer four, where we don't use the internet in certain spaces that increase the risk, right? So we talk about bedrooms, bathrooms, sleepovers, buses, and grandma and grandpa's houses. Those are like the five danger areas where we don't want young people online. We talk about the toxic trio at Protect Young Eyes. That's anytime you have the internet, a digital device, along with bedrooms, boredom, and darkness. That's the toxic trio. You increase the risk of screwing up online. Always. I don't care if you're 4 or 14 or 40. If you constantly use the internet while darkness, bedrooms, and boredom is present, you increase the risk of a stupid decision by 100. I mean, as a man who struggled in the evening almost all the time when it came to pornography, a lot of horrible things seem pretty normal at night that aren't normal at all. There's just something about the darkness in the internet that is a real toxic combination. And then that fifth layer are apps. Like Snapchat does have some controls. Instagram does have some controls. I know that's how you and I are connected through Instagram. But, Instagram's interpretation of what is appropriate content just doesn't always align with mine, Sarah. I don't know about you. I'm going to guess that's probably true for you too. And so I'm not going to depend on Instagram's controls. That's why it's the thinnest part of the protections up at the top. It's an augmentation of the other layers, but never a replacement for those other layers. So that's the image that we often use with parents, just to try to make it as understandable and as just one step at a time as possible.
This is blowing my mind. I just replaced my routers, right? And my Wi-Fi kept going out, and so I call up my provider and say I want the updated routers. They send me I think two or three of them to put around my house. I don't know what they do. I don't know why I have, but they just said plug it in. So I plug it in, right? Like I have no even concept of what a router does other than get me online, right? So that piece just in and of itself is crazy to me, because I think most parents don't know the actual purpose other than on or off, right?
That's right.
With a router, that there's any differentiation between them. And then I also wanted to ask, are there certain apps or social media platforms that you see as being worse than others? And I know we talked a little bit offline about, I mentioned to you that many of my cases have some tie-in to Snapchat. I've seen time and time again predators getting access to children through Snapchat. And that's one that's like a ding, ding, ding to me. I'm not on it. I don't know about it. So I don't know the particulars about why that might be, maybe an easier barrier to entry for predators to get access to kids. But I know you've written before on your blog about the concept of sextortion, what it is, how it happens. Talk to me a little bit about that, and if parents should know about any big danger zones in terms of any of these platforms.
So each platform, they have a lot of features in common, but some of them are known for different things, right? So TikTok is known for its ridiculously addictive algorithm, which means a ton of young people are there. And because it's video content and it's entertaining, it's in some parents' minds sort of just another version of YouTube to them. So they give it to young children, which, as you and I both know, wherever the children are is also where predators are. That's been true about the internet since the dawn of the internet, right? So those are some of the complexities and pitfalls there. Instagram has many of the same features of Snapchat, but is by and large known as a post content feed kind of app, which for some young people just creates this insecurity around likes and comments and image and perfection and comparing myself that is truly toxic for young people. And it's no secret, you look at the trend lines by gender, that more often it's young girls who are struggling with that sort of platform because they're more mature than boys at the teen age. And it's a well-established fact that females more often struggle with internalizing disorders like anxiety and depression and insecurity and things. And because of that accelerated maturity, are often feeling those things at a younger age. And then we drop them inside of a platform that causes you to compare yourself constantly to a millisecond of somebody else's perfection. Of course, that's going to be detrimental to some young people, particularly young females. Then you have Snapchat, which is often the destination, but it's not the trailhead. So I'm an outdoor guy, so I think of a trailhead is where you begin, and there's a destination that you're going to. TikTok and Instagram are, frequently the trailhead. That's where they begin. But for a bad actor, the destination is almost always Snapchat because that's where evidence disappears. So there's this toxic symbiotic relationship that goes on between platforms to shuttle kids over to Snapchat because it's just so much more difficult for law enforcement and others to get their hands on content. And there's just something psychologically different about Snapchat. It is known and has been known for over a decade to be the place where evidence disappears. Therefore, as a young person, you're more bound to take risk inside of an app whose promise to you is that things disappear. I don't care how many parental controls you have, because of what I know about teenage neurology and the three parts of our brain, and that middle part of the brain in a young person who's going through adolescence, which is so worried about connection and fitting in and who my people are and am I popular, am I going to get noticed? That being on fire during adolescence, plus an app that promises you can get away with anything, is just very unhealthy, let's just say, for a teen brain. I don't want teenagers inside of Snapchat. It is a limbic system, turbocharged monster for adolescent brains, and way too many of them simply can't handle it. I don't know that there's a worst one out there. We have to know our kiddos. But if there's one that's winning by like a nose, I think it's got to be Snapchat by a distance. What I say to adults and parents who ask me that question, the app that can most quickly change the life of a young person is Snapchat. The one that over time, like a fade from good to bad, will corrode the life of a young person or change thoughts and thinking and opinions of a young person over time toward distortion is TikTok. Because of the way that it feeds and that algorithm and the For You section just drips certain types of videos into your life so that over time your opinions change, your ideas about things change. It's this slow fade toward an unhealthy spot that often makes it harder for parents to notice it's going on. So, and it's a long-winded answer to your question, but I think parents need to be fully aware of what each one has, what its features are, what its risks are, and based on what they know about their kiddos, not ask what's the right age. That's the wrong question. The question is, based on what you know about your kid and what you know about the app, what digital experiences provide my child the best chance at having the best childhood? And make decisions based on that question instead of just the age question. Because some 14-year-olds can handle Instagram, but some 24-year-olds can't. So it's a complicated question.
That might be the most profound piece of conversation that we've ever had on this show. I really mean that. The work you're doing is absolutely amazing, Chris. Talk to me about legislation. Talk to me about big tech. Talk to me. You know, I have a lot of parents that say, okay, you know, I have a plan now for how I'm gonna parent my kid, but what can I do for the greater good? How can I help? You know, the fact that these laws are so archaic, I come up against that in my work all the time.
I
What
bet.
are you doing? What do we do? How can we help?
Great. So I used a framework before, which I would call a micro framework, the layers of protection, because it applies to your home. There's a macro framework that one fits inside of, because there are layers in society that I believe have a responsibility. We have, and this is just the heartburn that I have, we have a unique duty of care to protect children. As adults, as a good society, we have a unique duty of care. We will be judged by how we treat our children. Okay. So, with that in mind, all layers of society have a responsibility to, steward this duty of care. There is the manufacturer or the industry responsibility, there's the governmental or policy responsibility, there's the school responsibility, there's the home responsibility. And you could split policy down below into state and federal, but then there's the kid responsibility. And what we have right now is what I call the inverse ability responsibility matrix going on, where we've put all the responsibility on parents and kids, but all the ability lives at the bottom in big tech, in governments, in all these entities with endless resources. So what we need is to flip that around. We need to create accountability in the entities that have the greatest ability to affect change. And when they don't do that, the penalty should be so great to them that it hurts. Now, I know that sounds like a horrible thing to say, but having come from corporate America, my job was in the wake of Enron, if you remember that back in the early 2000s, my job was to go into publicly traded companies and to prevent them from becoming the next Enron. And the way that that was enforced was there was a law passed in 2002 called the Sarbanes-Oxley Act. And what it did was it created personal liability for CEOs and CFOs who didn't have financial reporting controls in place to prevent fraud in their public filings. And you know what happened once that law was put in place? Everybody shaped up and it never happened
What a
again.
shocker.
What a shocker, because you created liability.
Yep.
Liability, Sarah, is the great restraint to irresponsible capitalism. It always has been. And guess what we don't have in the tech sector? Any accountability. And that goes back to a law that's even older than the 25-year-old one. It's a 28-year-old law from 1996 that created a blanket of immunity for all tech companies that has been grossly misinterpreted by the courts into something that Congress never intended it to be. So, big tech, the statement that I make is when they harm children, it needs to hurt so badly that they change their habits, right? When they harm, it has to hurt financially so they change their habits. Otherwise, they'll never change. That's why we need laws that create personal liability for the Mark Zuckerbergs and the Evan Spiegels and the, Jason, the guy over at Discord. When they are not using best business practices that are audited by a third party to protect kids, they need to be paying through the nose until they change their habits. That's my
Amen.
stance.
Amen. That's, and that's sort of the similar paradigm to what I do in my work too, right? So I've heard like the Mark Zuckerbergs and all those big tech, gurus, they don't give their kids any technology. That's what
No.
I've heard. I don't know if it's true. I'm not in their home, but I've heard that they know how bad it is that they would not raise their even their own children with access to technology.
Yeah, they live very low tech lives, and yet unleash all of this upon us. So I did a really poor job of answering your original question, which is what can your listeners here do? And I think that it's easy to forget that we have a lot of access to our state and federal legislators. I know not everybody can fly to DC, but if you could, you could walk up and down, the halls where senators and representatives are, go and knock on their office doors. They all have offices there, and whoever is there will meet with you, whether it's their chief of staff or others, they will meet with you. You can go to their websites and flood them with emails that they do read and respond to. At the state level, you can go to town hall if you go to your representative. Even I would challenge, I'm sure many of you listening to this may not even know who your local state senator and/or representatives are, and I would invite you to find out. Make them aware of what you believe in. Show up at their town hall meetings at the local coffee joint or whatever it is. Go visit the office in the capital in the state where you live in to let them know. Stay connected to organizations like ours, NICOSI, the National Center on Sexual Exploitation, Child Fund, IJM, and others that will often have calls to action where you can send a letter through some of their tools that will automatically send correspondence to let individuals at the state and federal level know what laws you want passed. So there are many things that we, the people, can do, in addition to just sharing good content online with others. And that's at just the kind of the legislative level. There is a lot we can do even in our communities that every one of the schools that your kids listening to this are connected to. Do they allow technology in the classroom that you don't agree with? Do they allow children to carry personal devices with them? Right? Schools are one of those macro levels that I think need to be doing a better job of preparing our kids for a digital world, but also preventing distraction from digital devices that are unhealthy and unhelpful to their education. And schools can do that. And parents, I would invite you to support those initiatives. Don't be the parent that fights back against schools that are trying to remove personal devices from the school day, even though it's best for your kids, makes them smarter, and actually makes them safer during an active shooter situation. I will have all kinds of conversations with parents about that because the last thing that I want a child in the midst of an active shooter situation doing is on a device that could notify and make a sound and let someone know where they are while also distracting them from doing the one thing that I want them doing in that situation, and that is listening to the adult so they get out alive while also not spreading 100 different versions of misinformation about what's going on that creates unnecessary chaos. Right? So these are the fears and the things, even as parents, where we get in the way of what good things need to happen in some of these layers because of our own fears and us just not understanding, all that's in play here. So there's a lot that we can do, that we can engage in, that we have example policies, we have example scripts that you can say at school board meetings or with principals, research. Right. If you're interested in making change with how technology is being used in your districts, we have everything that you could imagine to help with that effort.
That's amazing. And what you just said about just walking the halls in Washington or calling up, your state rep. I've done that. I've literally done it both in Washington and locally, and it's true.
Yeah,
You walk
that's
in the
true.
office, somebody's going to meet with you. They're going to talk to you. You don't
Yeah.
need an appointment. They listen. The more, you press, they are civil servants, there to serve their public and their voters. And so I think I want to just reiterate that you do have a voice, whether you think you know how to advocate or you don't. Your voice matters, and just showing up or calling or sending that email really does have some effect. I never thought about that active shooter scenario. In my mind, I'm thinking, well, that's the one time you'd want your kid to have a phone. But no, you want the adult in the classroom to have the phone and the access to technology. I was listening to a teacher testify in Michigan about the active
Oh,
shooter situation in
yeah.
Michigan, and she was in the classroom, and her phone was how she was able to alert her principal and colleagues that she
Yeah.
had been shot. But you think about kids going on and videoing and being distracted and whatever, everything you said totally makes perfect sense.
Yeah.
Any final thoughts, Chris McKenna? I'm going to bring you back if you're willing. I mean, every blog post on your site, and we're going to link to your site, is its own 1 hour, 2 hour conversation. It's very hard to narrow down the things I wanted to talk about. I think today you gave a beautiful overview of these issues.
Sure.
I'd love
Good.
to bring you back if you're ever willing. But any final thoughts for my audience? And again, I find this to be one of the very, very, very most important conversations we've had on this show.
Yeah, well, thank you for that, Sarah. I'm honored and privileged that you would share me this time with your audience. And we've talked about a lot of big things. I guarantee some will listen to this and there'll be a twinge of overwhelmed, a twinge of fear that may creep in. I want to speak against that. And I want you to just pick one thing. Maybe it's the router. Just pick that thing. Maybe it's one intentional conversation during car time, mealtime, or bedtime where you just look at your son or daughter and say, there's nothing that could ever happen to you on a digital device that would ever freak me out. I'm safe. Just pick one thing and do that this week. That's it. That's it. And gain some confidence from that. And then pick another thing. And we love just one step at a time helping parents and families through this. Sarah, we have a private community now because it's getting harder and harder to say certain things in social media spaces without getting your hand slapped. So we've built our own private community where we provide one-on-one tech support for families. And we have emergency resources if your child runs into a predator or is struggling with pornography or is in a sextortion situation, which we could talk about another time, exactly how to handle that, regardless of the demands that are being made. We have all of those in our what we call the table. We want families to come together to the table to talk about these things. And you can find information about that in our social media spaces. So just one step at a time. That's what I want to leave with your listeners so that you are constantly taking positive steps forward.
You're incredible, Chris McKenna. Thank you so much for being here, you guys. The website is protectyoungeyes.com. I cannot recommend it enough. Go read the blog. We're going to link to your social media. And I promise you, God willing, Chris McKenna will be back on Bar Fights sooner than later. Chris, thank you so much for being here.
My pleasure, Sarah. Take care.
Thank you for listening to Bar Fights with attorney Sarah Klein, taking on issues that matter. Please check out our website at barfightspodcast.com, Instagram at barfightspodcast, or Twitter at barfights_pod for the latest show updates and archives.